And we are at the top of the hour, so at this time I would like to introduce our presenter. Today joining us we have Dr. Jenny Sullivan. She's a health science specialist at VA Boston Healthcare System and a research assistant professor at Boston University School of Public Health. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Sullivan, and I will now turn things over to you.
Great, thanks so much. So good afternoon. I am Jenny Sullivan, and I am an investigator at QIRE here in Boston. My work focuses on quality of geriatrics and long-term services and support programs throughout the care continuum, and I'm excited to have an opportunity to present today about the implementation of the GeriPact model in VA and share some of the work we've been doing on our partnered evaluation of GeriPact implementation. We're collaborating with the Center for Comprehensive Access and Delivery Research and Evaluation and their associated PACT lab on this evaluation, and our operational partner is the Office of Geriatrics and Extended Care and their affiliated GAC Data Analysis Center. So before we get started, I wanted to get a sense of your primary role in VA.
Thank you, Jenny. So for our attendees, as you can see, the poll question is up on your screen at this time. Please select one of the following: GeriPact team member, PACT team member, other clinician, researcher, or other. And please note if you are selecting other, at the end of the presentation, I will put up a feedback survey with a more extensive list of job titles, so you might find your exact one there to select. All right, it looks like had about 80% response rate. So at this time, I'm going to go ahead and close down the poll and share those results. 3% of our attendees selected GeriPact team member, 10% PACT team member, 16% other clinician, 32% researcher, and 39% selected other. Jenny, before we move on, do you have any commentary on that?
No, thank you. I think it will be a good mix of folks on the call today, and I'm hoping we have provided information for all of you in terms of what you're looking for. So I look forward to questions at the end as well. So I wanted to start with some information regarding older veterans' healthcare needs. So in fiscal year 2012, over 52% of the 6.2 million veterans receiving primary care in VA were 65 years or older, and many in this age group, in addition to multiple medical issues, have functional and cognitive impairments that can dramatically increase in severity with advancing age. And in addition, older adults may have unmet psychosocial needs requiring additional long-term services and supports. So these characteristics among older veterans markedly intensify demands on staff and resource requirements for patient care. So that leads to the second poll question, which is, what is the fastest growing subpopulation of VA's patient population?
Thank you. So for our attendees, go ahead and please select one of the options: 18 to 25-year-olds, 26 to 40-year-olds, 41 to 64-year-olds, 65 to 84-year-olds, and 85 and older. Go ahead and just select the circle right there next to your response. And the answers are still streaming in, so I'll give people a few more seconds to reply. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close out the poll now and share those results. So 12% of our respondents selected the age group 26 to 40-year-olds. 15% of our respondents selected the age group 41 to 64-year-olds. 53% of our respondents selected 65 to 84-year-olds. And 21% selected 85 and older. So thank you to those respondents, and I will turn it back to you now, Jenny. Jennifer, you may be on mute.
Oh, great. Thank you. Sorry about that. So veterans over age 85 years are the fastest growing subpopulation of VA's patient population. And these veterans have the most cognitive and physically kind of fall in the disabled category of older veteran population. Over half of the veterans in this age group have a diagnosis of dementia and require daily assistance with personal care needs. And so the reason I'm presenting the information is to highlight the needs of older veterans and how programs should be thinking about how to optimize health, independence, and well-being of our older veterans. So at this point, I wanted to move on to talk about some background. So in the 1980s, geriatric evaluation and management was adopted by VA to provide inpatient comprehensive geriatric assessment and management. However, GEM patients benefited from comprehensive geriatric assessment's interdisciplinary care planning and management. They often faced decline without close monitoring once they were back in the community. And to provide such monitoring, GEM continuity clinics were independently implemented at multiple VA sites through a program of interdisciplinary, team-based, veteran-centered coordinated care known as geriatric primary care. So the programs were of sufficient number and penetration that year to warrant the issuance of a handbook in 2008. And then in 2010, as the VA Office of Patient Care Services initiated National PACT implementation, GPC, with very little modification to actual practice, was rebranded as GeriPACT. So by fiscal year 2015, there were about 60,000 patients receiving GeriPACT services out of about 1.5 million enrolled veterans aged 65 and older with a Gen frailty index of 3 or greater, and the frailty index kind of measures the need for long-term institutionalization, and so those would be patients that would be kind of appropriate for GeriPACT. And a GeriPACT handbook, largely unchanged from its GPC predecessor, was issued to the field in 2015. So GeriPACTs are not simply PACTs for older adults. The GeriPACT handbook specifies program goals, inclusion and exclusion criteria, and anticipated benefits to the healthcare system. So the goal of GeriPACT is to provide frail older patients and caregivers with access to the most appropriate care for their healthcare needs through a single point of contact for geriatric primary care. So three characteristics really differentiate GeriPACT from PACT: team composition, panel size, and provider experience. So the core team of PACT consists of the provider, and for each full-time equivalent of a provider, one nurse care manager, one clinical associate, and one administrative associate. So in contrast, the core GeriPACT includes typical PACT staff, as well as including social work and a clinical pharmacist. So in PACT, panel size is typically capped at 1,200 patients in a panel. And a GeriPACT panel is limited to two-thirds the size of a PACT panel, so this would average about 800 patients per full-time provider. And finally, whereas PACT providers treat patients of all ages, including caring for frail older veterans, many providers do not have specialized training to do so. So GeriPACT providers have received either advanced training in geriatric medicine or demonstrate advanced experience in geriatric care as outlined in the VHA handbook. So what is the benefit of having a GeriPACT? So the GeriPACT model leverages a multidisciplinary team with longer encounters, and it can enhance coordination of biopsychosocial care, provide high-quality, personalized, proactive, patient-centered care, and promote a positive culture of service through reflexive team behaviors, processes, and systems. So the GeriPACT model is hypothesized to improve patient and staff satisfaction and care quality, potentially reducing likelihood of costly healthcare services such as hospitalization or long-term institutionalization, as well as functional decline. So to date, the only research on GeriPACT has been conducted by GECDAC, looking at costs, and has found that GeriPACT costs were about $6,000 less per patient than PACT. And so much still remains in terms of research for the PACT model, in terms of what the programs look like in variation in structural characteristics, care processes, and also patient utilization and cost outcomes. So really, we have a lot to learn around the GERIPACT model. So in 2015, our team received funding from QERI and the Office of Geriatrics and Extended Care to conduct a partnered evaluation of GERIPACT implementation. This slide displays what we are addressing as part of the evaluation. In particular, we have four specific aims. The first aim is to assess GERIPACT implementation adherence to the model and service outcomes, which we're considering robust team-based care dimensions. The second aim is to examine the relationship of implementation adherence, service outcomes, and patient utilization and GERIPACT costs. Our third aim is to compare utilization and cost outcomes for similar GERIPACT and PACT patients over time. And the fourth aim is to identify important organizational contextual factors associated with GERIPACT performance. So for today's presentation, I'll focus on aim 1 and 4 because the quantitative aims are still in progress. So I will present methods and results for each aim sequentially. So the goal of aim 1, as I just mentioned, was to assess GERIPACT implementation adherence and service outcomes, in particular team-based care dimensions. So to measure adherence and team-based care, we worked with Ken Shea, our operational sponsor, to develop two web surveys. The first survey targeted GERIPACT physician leaders and assessed GERIPACT structures and PACT components. And many of the GERIPACT structures were in the GERIPACT handbook. In addition, we used an adapted version of the Medical Home Builder survey to assess PACT components, which included things like access and scheduling practices, organization of GERIPACT practices, care coordination and transitions of care, population management, quality and performance improvement, and care processes utilized. So such things as use of self-management tools, involvement of patients in care. The second survey was adapted from work done by Dr. Helena Temkin-Greener in collaboration with Dr. Introtor. Past surveys have been done in various institutional and non-institutional settings, including in the community nursing homes, PACE, and HBPC. So in our case, GERIPACT team members were invited to take the survey, and the focus of the survey was on team functioning, including scales like team effectiveness, conflict management, team cohesion, and communication and collaboration. So the surveys were fielded in the summer of 2016 for a four-week period, and today I'm going to mostly focus on the results from the physician leader survey, which measured GERIPACT structural characteristics or adherence kind of to the GERIPACT model. So our response rates were 62% for the physician leader survey and 52% for team member survey. There were 44 GERIPACT facilities participating in the leader survey, and within those 44 medical centers, there were 101 GERIPACT teams outlined. 55% of the medical centers had more than one GERIPACT team at their site. So we asked how patients were assigned to GERIPACT teams. The majority of teams, or 76%, reported that providers were assigned a separate panel of patients, and each panel shared core team members. Far fewer sites reported any other methods of assignment, including providers being assigned a separate panel of patients and each panel having distinct team members, which would kind of be the golden standard, or providers sharing a panel of patients and the panel having its own core members. We also asked about space allocation for the GERIPACT teams and saw that the types of space were pretty well split between having dedicated space co-located in geriatrics or specialty care, being co-located with PACT. It is notable that 25% of GERIPACTs do not have dedicated space. So we also asked physician leaders the ways patient got assigned to GERIPACT, and respondents could check all methods that applied to them. And the most often utilized methods were by PACT referral only, and by patient request. However, just under half of the teams also assigned newly enrolled VA patients meeting certain age criteria to GeriPact, or assigned current PACT patients based on age and condition to GeriPact. The least often reported method was newly enrolled VA patients based on health conditions only. We also asked several questions about other GeriPact structures. Over two-thirds of GeriPacts had designated educators and also had designated case managers to coordinate across specialties or with providers outside of GeriPact, and 64% of the GeriPacts reported doing comprehensive geriatric evaluation as part of their GeriPact work. And then finally, over a third of GeriPacts had written collaborative service agreements with PACT. So as mentioned earlier, a GeriPact core team includes a provider, registered nurse, clinical associate, social worker, clinical pharmacist, and administrative associate. So we asked GeriPacts about their assignment of full-time equivalent staffing. Despite many GeriPacts having critical staff in place, they were not always appointed at sufficient effort. So it's important to note that of the core team members listed in the GeriPact handbook, only three were staffed with mean FTE coverage at or above 0.7. So namely the physician and geriatrician, nurse practitioner, clinical associate, and the nurse care manager. So the mean FTE for the remaining core team members, social worker, administrative associate, and pharmacist kind of range between 0.35 and 0.56. An extended GeriPact team member is a healthcare professional designated to a GeriPact PACT position who provides direct discipline-specific patient care to one or more panels of patients. So examples of extended team members are registered dietitians, primary care mental health integration staff, and you can see here on the slide extended team FTE reported by the GeriPacts. And the extended team members often had low mean FTE coverage. And sort of you can see the number of GeriPacts reporting these roles were limited. So we also asked about PACT components in the Physician Leader Survey, which was adapted from the Medical Home Builder Survey. Physician leaders responded yes or no to each practice, which were grouped within six areas. So this table shows means and lists the number of questions per component, and each yes response would result in getting 1 point. We saw that there was a lot of variation across sites and PACT component scores. The communication coordination scores have the highest mean given the number of questions, followed by access and scheduling, and PACT organization principles, so such things as team huddles or notifying patients about lab tests. I provided a citation to an article that will be published next month on the slide. In it, we discuss implementation of GeriPact and also present some data on the most and least commonly reported PACT practices within GeriPact. So given the time limits, I won't go into too much depth here, but I did want to provide a few examples of some of the most commonly reported practices by domain. So in access and scheduling, GeriPacts provide non-face-to-face clinical guidance to patients. In care coordination, they review information received from other facilities to identify what follow-up support a patient needs. In population management, they incorporate evidence-based guidelines into everyday workflows for important conditions seen by PACT. Within care processes, they involve patients in their own decision-making and also offer patients information about advanced directives. Within quality and process improvement, GeriPacts measure or receive data on the performance of the practice on key clinical and administrative processes. And then in terms of organizational elements, GeriPacts work as a team and notify patients of all abnormal results. So remember when I said I was mostly going to focus on the physician leader results regarding structural characteristics. So given the audience, I thought you might also be interested in hearing from the GeriPact team members about what they saw as the unique function of GeriPact and also what the barriers to providing care are for them. So we had included these items as open-ended questions at the end of the team member survey, and we grouped similar responses to come up with this list. So you can see that team members felt there were several unique functions of GeriPath. The focus on unique issues of the population and understanding the needs, ability to provide comprehensive care and continuity of care, close involvement with disciplines with geriatrics expertise and certified providers, open communication and excellent teamwork, and also the involvement of patients and family and caregivers as well.
Jenny, did we lose you on the call?
Oh, sorry about that. Yes, you did for a minute. So we also asked team members about the barriers they experienced when providing GeriPath care, and we had heard about several things, including staffing issues, clinic space and location, team-based issues, including communication and coordination, patient transportation, infrastructure issues, time with patients, and also getting support for longer appointments. Slots, and then kind of related leadership support for the GeriPact program. So now that I've gotten you interested in some of the factors affecting GeriPact functioning, I wanted to turn our attention to AIM 4, where I will go through more thoroughly and where we looked at factors affecting GeriPact implementation. So the goal of AIM 4 was to identify important organizational contextual factors associated with GeriPath's performance, and really we saw this as an opportunity to help GeriPath struggling to implement the model and assist newly implemented GeriPath teams. Our work is guided by the Consolidated Framework for Implementation Research, or CFER. It provides a menu of constructs that have been associated with effective implementation and was created by a thorough scan of available literature in 2009. It's comprised of constructs from that review organized into one framework, and many of you are probably already familiar with CFER. But in case you aren't, I'll give a quick overview that there are five overarching domains, including characteristics of individuals, where organizations are made up of individuals, and ultimately care provision and implementation efforts are rooted in the action and behaviors of those individuals. Intervention characteristics, key attributes of interventions influence success of implementation. So for example, cost or adaptability of the intervention. Inner setting are institutional factors particularly important for successful implementation. So things like networks and communication or culture. Outer setting are external factors playing a role in implementation, like external policies, and the process of implementation itself, which is the process you undertake to implement an intervention. So things you would think about how you were planning for the intervention, you're reflecting and evaluating on how it's going, etc. So within each domain, there are multiple constructs to select from based on your particular study. And for our study, we selected 26 of 39 constructs across those five domains. And obviously, I can't put them all on one slide, so I do not have them here for you. But if you'd like more information on what we selected, please contact me. There'll be some information at the end of the presentation. So in terms of our methods, we selected 8 high-adherence GeriPath sites, meaning they met the criteria laid out in the handbook, including having dedicated space, having appropriate core team members assigned, serving geriatric conditions and syndromes listed in the GeriPath handbook, having appropriate provider FTE given the panel size. So additionally, sites varied on PACT access as measured by question 6 and question 9 on the SHEP survey, which measures patient satisfaction with access to routine and emergency care at the facility level, and team functioning as measured on the team member survey. So in terms of our sample, we were interested in interviewing key informants at each site most knowledgeable about GeriPath. We recruited GeriPath core and extended team members, PACT representatives, other providers working with GeriPact in some way, and executive leaders and middle managers when appropriate. We collected data on the factors affecting implementation by conducting 8 in-person site visits. The visits occurred between November 2016 and February 2017, and the visits lasted 2 days, and our teams that went to each site consisted of 2 team members. So with consent, we audio recorded all of the interviews, and the interview guide was developed based on CIFR construct questions available on the CIFR wiki page, and I've had the sources right there on the slide. We also had several additional open-ended questions to capture other things, such as GeriPAC program features, facilitators and barriers to providing care. We pilot tested our questions with 3 GeriPAC Summit attendees, that summit had happened previous to being in the field, obviously. So before starting data analysis, all audio recordings were transcribed. Before coding, our team met to come to agreement on the coding construct definitions and updated them as needed for this study, which took us about 4 interviews. We then double-coded the remaining 130 interviews as transcripts became available. And so we were coding again for CIFR a priori codes and then the emergent codes that had come up along the way as well as we were coding. So once coding was complete, data were pulled for each CIFR construct by site, and analysts reviewed the data and summarized data for each construct in a matrix containing a summary about the evidence and pulling some exemplar quotes for that particular construct. Analysts then reviewed the evidence for each of those constructs to determine the type of influence the construct had on implementation. So the analyst gave a rating, taking the supportive qualitative summary and exemplar quotes into consideration. So the rating was a 1 if all evidence was positive, a 0 if evidence was mixed, where there was some positive evidence and some negative evidence within the construct, a -1 if all evidence was negative, and missing if there were less than 2 quotes coded. So once the matrix was done for the site, ratings were discussed in a team meeting to reach consensus on each construct rating, and then we followed that same process for each of those 8 sites. So we went site by site. Once the ratings were finalized, a cross-site matrix was created to allow us to compare trends in ratings, or patterns, really, in ratings across all sites, and then across our 2 performance categories, which were packed access and team functioning. So let's move on to begin to tell you what we found. So to give you a sense about our sites, I wanted to share some select information about them. As expected, based on our sampling strategy, there were 4 sites that were high and 4 sites that were low on packed access and team functioning. Sites were geographically distributed throughout the country, and 1 site was outside the continental U.S. You can see that the number of teams varied from 1 to 7, and the majority of sites had written collaborative agreements with PACT. 3 of our sites were somehow affiliated with a geriatric research, education, and clinical center, or a GREC, and maximum panel sizes really varied from sites, from 280 to 900 patients on a panel. We interviewed 134 staff members across the 8 sites. 49% of our sample were GeriPAC core team members. 19% of our sample were middle managers or service line leaders. And the remainder of our sample consists of GeriPAC extended team members and also providers outside of GeriPAC. So now I'd like to present our data regarding the positive influences affecting GeriPAC implementation across all sites, so meaning that a majority of sites had a similar rating. And we selected 6 out of 8 sites as our cutoff point, so it seemed like a majority, regardless of kind of the performance data. So in other words, we weren't really looking by packed access or team functioning yet. We just were looking across all 8 sites. So we had identified 5 constructs where all evidence across the majority of sites were positive, including knowledge and beliefs, relative advantage, culture, learning climate, and champions, opinion leaders, implementation leaders. So we grouped the last category in terms of champions, opinion leaders, and implementation leaders together. They are separate constructs in CIFR. We found that there was a lot of overlap in our data, and it was really difficult to distinguish, so we decided to kind of group them together for this study. So now I'd like to present some information about each construct. So knowledge and beliefs are the individual's attitudes toward and value placed on GeriPact, as well as familiarity with facts and principles related to GeriPact. And here is an example quote. It's a team that takes on all the responsibilities for the management of primary care patients, but for a patient population with unique and increased needs relative to our general primary care teams. I think some of the unique services that we're able to provide through GeriPact interactions between the clinician, social workers, and pharmacy include better management of social needs of the patient, additional supports in the home, and support for polypharmacy. That is a danger to all of us as we get older. So staff at the majority of sites were committed to providing care to older veterans and enjoyed working with this patient population. Staff knew their patients very well and understood patients had special needs or complex care needs requiring more time. So staff valued the GeriPact model and its focus on collaborative care. Relative advantage refers to stakeholders' perception of the advantage of implementing GeriPact versus an alternative solution. So the quote here would be, in comparison to PACT, GeriPact is a special team devoted to the frail or elderly population that have geriatric syndromes that are better served by an interdisciplinary team than from a standalone provider. In comparison to PACT, staff felt GeriPact allowed them to build high levels of rapport with veterans because of the amount of time spent with them. The model also provided some additional resources in addition to PACT, which were important for GeriPact patients with higher acuity. Again, in particular, the social worker and pharmacist. So in addition, GeriPact providers had the training in geriatrics, and the team felt better equipped to deal with more complex patients than PACT. Culture was the next construct, and it's defined as the norms, values, and basic assumptions of a given organization, and in this case, outside of GeriPact. And a sample quote was, the values, eye care values that the VA has, are at the heart of everything that we do. In our clinic, we definitely are here to serve veterans, show compassion. We're advocates for our patients. So staff at the majority of sites expressed commitment to the VA's mission and thought it was applicable to GeriPact. Sites had positive cultures where GeriPact fit into the organizations and where sites were committed to an interdisciplinary team-based approach to care. And learning climate is a climate where leaders express need for team members' assistance and input, where team members feel they're essential, valued, and knowledgeable partners in a change process. Individuals can feel psychologically safe to try new methods, and there's sufficient time and space for reflective thinking and evaluation. So a sample quote in this construct was, I think we work well together. We get along. If we don't agree with something, we'll discuss, and then everyone has input, and then we come out with a solution. So sites mentioned having positive learning climates where the environment was receptive. Leadership listened to staff and providers and worked to address their needs. Leaders empowered staff to be champions. Staff mentioned having open discussions if they didn't agree with something, and many staff felt comfortable giving input. Team members felt the providers respected them. And then finally, champions, opinion leaders, and implementation leaders can be individuals who dedicate themselves to supporting or driving through GeriPact implementation or overcoming resistance. Have some sort of formal or informal influence on attitudes or beliefs of colleagues in terms of implementing GeriPact, or have been formally appointed with responsibility for implementing GeriPact. And the sample quote is, it took staff buy-in and leadership support from our leaders. For example, our nurse manager is really good at escorting and encouraging and being on top of things and making sure things are working. She rolls up her sleeves and gets in and helps out. She's always open for talking if there's an issue or any type of communication issue. So the majority of sites had a number of champions and implementation leaders who have supported GeriPact and were involved in initiating it at their sites. Leaders varied and included mid-level service line leaders, GeriPact medical directors, and also there were enthusiastic frontline staff championing the GeriPact model. So one example of that was a nurse care manager filling pill boxes herself to hand out to patients because it was so important that they had the right pills for the right days and they weren't doing it themselves. So now I'd like to present our data regarding the negative influences affecting DuryPact implementation across all of the sites, meaning majority of sites having a similar rating. And we selected 4 out of 8 sites as our cutoff point because we really had few consistent negative influences reported by all of the sites. So in that regard, there was really only one negative influence I'll be reporting on today, and that's relative priority. And so relative priority is an individual shared perception of the importance of implementation and operation of DuryPact within the organization. And our sample quote is, staff got split and spread. It's not best. It's competing priorities. So depending on who the administrator is, the short-term goals, the medical center priorities, geriatrics is not always, the resources aren't always there. In fact, we have experienced a resource reduction. So all sites felt that DuryPact was in the background and that there were many programs competing for resources. As we hear, I know from many different studies in VA, priority can go to where there are pressing needs or national priorities. So for example, priority has gone to behavioral health or same-day access most recently. And also there is great emphasis on productivity and metrics. And DuryPact can't always keep up because, one, it's labor intensive because of the patient population. And although DuryPact is viewed positively, it also isn't, not all of the performance metrics available are appropriate for the patient population over 75 as well. So next, I wanted to talk about variation by performance. And so we assessed if there were any differences between sites with high and low PACT access and high and low team functioning. And for these ratings, there had to be a difference of at least 2 points, meaning that 2 out of 4 sites had reported the same influence. So we didn't really see any consistent themes for PACT access, which might not be a surprise since the measures are at the facility level and not specific to DuryPact itself. However, for team functioning, we did see a pattern for one additional construct, networks and communication. And by networks and communication, we mean the nature and quality of webs of social networks and the nature and quality of formal and informal communications within and outside of the organization. So the networks and communications construct was positive for sites with high team functioning and negative for sites with low team functioning. So first, here's what we found for sites with high team functioning and positive networks and communications. So the sample quote is, you have to be willing to work outside your silo. You have to be willing to help each other out. I'm not a doctor, so I don't practice like a doctor, but there are things that I know that I can give as interventions that are not doctor interventions. In addition, the doctor knows right away when a patient needs to come in and communicates that type of thing to me. She's on top of it. I'm then able to call the patient right away. So staff at sites with high team functioning had positive experiences with networks and communication. Core and extended teams spoke positively about each other. Team members recognized they needed to work together as a team to provide strong patient care. Sites had open door communication and multiple ways to communicate to each other through email, link, telephone, face-to-face. Some sites had co-located staff, allowing them to have better communication, and staff seemed to have an easier time coordinating with other clinics or services outside of DuryPact because there was an overlap in staffing between DuryPact and some other clinics, especially the case when staff were somehow associated with a GREP. So on the flip side, the networks and communication construct was negative for sites with low team functioning, and that sample quote is, we have a fantastic team, there's really good continuity of care, despite that we are so disjointed. I think we all try to communicate well, at least with our patients. I don't think we're communicating as well with each other as we should be. Staff are so busy, we are so all over the place, but the patient themselves seem pleased. So while low performing sites on the team functioning scale also mentioned having some positive aspects of team dynamics, including a team working together pretty well and using multiple communication mechanisms, there were more examples of issues regarding team cohesion, team members fitting in, and having a hard time communicating with leaders and each other. Staff members in the low-performing sites had more neutral comments about team dynamics than the high-performing sites, And in addition, the low-performing sites also had more issues working with staff outside of GeriPact to coordinate care with other clinics. So I know I've presented a lot. So in conclusion, as our results name one show, there's a large variation in GeriPact model implementation. The GeriPact model was really successfully implemented in high adherence sites, partially because the model fit well within the medical center's organizational setting, obviously. The breadth of factors that positively influence GeriPact implementation underlies dedication of GeriPact team members and leaders to the model and patients they serve. However, GeriPacts also have competing and other more pressing priorities, at least at the medical center level to deal with, such as access to behavioral health, which can hinder implementation or hinder priority in getting resources. So future research at this point should really focus on how these variations impact patient outcomes. We hope to be able to provide some guidance on these issues in the coming months as we finish up our evaluation looking at the relationship of structures and processes that we've reported out on with patient outcomes and costs. So before closing, I just wanted to acknowledge that this is the team working on the partnered evaluation, and without their commitment and tireless work over the last 2 years, our evaluation wouldn't have been possible. So if you're on the call, thank you all. Great, and then I wanted to open up for any questions.
Excellent, thank you. We do have some good pending questions for our attendees. If you joined us after the top of the hour, to submit your question and comment, just use the GoToWebinar control panel on the right-hand side of your screen. Click the arrow next to the word questions, and that'll expand the dialog box, and you can submit it there. This first question refers back to slide 10. If 75% are by PACT referral only, how can 57% also be via patient request?
Oh, that's a very good question. This was check all that apply. So it would be, so each person would be able to check each of these things, the physician leader. So you could actually be assigning patients in multiple ways. So 75% were by PACT referral only, but in addition, 57% of GeriPacts were doing patient requests. So that wasn't individual items. They could only check one. They could do as many as they wanted.
Thank you. What does research show is the best location for GeriPacts within greater PACT environment?
I think that's a really good question, and one that I'm not sure there's an answer for right now. I think that that's something that I think PACT providers and PACT more generally is probably thinking about, and also GeriPACT in terms of how they can integrate or work together. And you know, what our evaluation has shown is there's multiple ways to do this. We don't know the best way to do it yet, and I think GEC would probably say that they don't want to be prescriptive in terms of the way that the structure, the GeriPacts are structured. So the jury is still out on that, I think.
Thank you. Will you be looking at the low adherent facilities as well? I would think that would be more interesting to see what can be improved.
So yes, you know, we struggled a lot with how to organize the site visits, and you know, we were really taking a positive deviance approach here for the evaluation. We at this point will not be looking at sites that are low performers, but I mean, I think that's something to look at for future research. Obviously, it would be interesting to see what the influences were for those low performers. So I think this is additional future work that could still be done moving forward.
Thank you. Are most of these PACs a member of ambulatory care or a member of geriatric services?
So I'm not sure. So we have the two kind of parts of the project. So in terms of the 44 GeriPacts that responded, I'm not, we didn't really ask like where they were located. Of our 8 sites that we visited, I think most of the majority of sites were kind of still housed in some way in specialty care and geriatrics, although we did see some integration with a couple of the sites that were sort of in ambulatory care.
Thank you. That is the final pending question at this time. We do have many people writing in thanking you for the presentation. While we wait for any further questions, would you like to make any concluding comments?
No, I'm just really excited we had an opportunity to present today and really look forward, if you'd like to contact me for more information about the evaluation or questions you have that weren't able to be covered today, please feel free. My email is right there for you, and you know, we're always looking also to collaborate on future research ideas. So thank you so much for listening in today.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Sullivan, for coming on and lending your expertise to the field. And thank you as well to our attendees for joining us. These PACT Cyber Seminars happen the third Wednesday of every month, and you recently received the email for our May session, so feel free to sign up for the next one there. And with that, attendees, please stick around. I am going to close out the meeting now, and a feedback survey will populate on your screen. Please take a few moments to fill out those few questions. We do look closely at your responses. So once again, thank you everybody for joining us, and this does conclude today's HSR&D Cyber Seminar. Thank you, Jenny.